FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. And how much gold is really out there? What's at the LBMA? What's at the COMEX? Well, that's a mystery. You don't know where to turn for accurate information, certainly not to those exchanges themselves. But David Jensen is here. You know him well. Find his work over at safehaven.com. And very knowledgeable about these things you are, David. And we're thrilled to have you back.
Well, it's my pleasure, Kerry. Always good to talk.
Hey, so what is really going on here at these exchanges? Is it just smoke and mirrors now and, you know, the emperor has no clothes?
Well, it's, you know, we've been trying to suss through what's been going on at the LBMA especially and going through their market guides and then using their published data, you know, identified earlier this year that they're trading 200 million ounces a day. In London. And that's kind of surprising because if you use a 2 to 3 times multiplier of the daily gross turnover volume, as you do for most commodities to find the open interest, it would suggest an open interest of 13,000 to 19,000 tons in round numbers. And these numbers are in the spot market. These are not forwards or futures. These are spot contracts that are being traded, which means that the ownership of the gold at the point of trading is being exchanged. So it's a claim on gold, as I said in the article right here, right now. And so it kind of, you know, we know that there's been tightness in the market. We've seen the backwardation in the gold price where the spot price has a higher price than the forwards. And the leasing costs have exceeded the LIBOR rate, which is also surprising, meaning it's more expensive to lease gold than it is to borrow U.S. dollars. And that shouldn't be the case because the leaser of the gold also has to store and insure it. So historically, it's always been cheaper to lease gold. So we've seen all these signs of shortage in the gold market. We've seen extraordinary volume in the London market, which is the world's preeminent exchange for setting the daily price of gold. And then now we've got this information coming out from Bullionstar there in Singapore with Ronan Manley and Koos Jansen have done some tremendous research. And, you know, what their work has shown us is that there's of the order of about 6 tons of gold in London outside of ownership by the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds, which they speak, you know, the amount of gold they say they hold is that gold would be spoken for. And outside of the Bank of England, which holds gold for official sector interests. So we've got this dichotomy here. We've got a problem. We've got a 13 to 19,000 ton open interest in claims on physical gold in a market in London. And then the work that they've done, that Bullionstar have done, indicates that there's of the order of 6 tons in London outside of those other interests of the ETFs and the Bank of England. So how do you match the 6 tons with the 13,000 to 19,000? And the short answer is that you can't.
Yeah. Wow. So somebody's not telling the truth, huh?
It appears that we're not being given the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me.
So help me God. Well, if they make it through another year, they'll have a lot to be thankful for next Thanksgiving, won't they? I mean, how long can this go on for?
I don't know. Maybe if they make it through this year, they have lots to be thankful for.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling. And it used to be that the numbers that the exchanges told you, you could pretty well take to the bank. But somehow that's changed now, hasn't it?
It has. It's a game that you can play when you have these unallocated spot contracts. And what it means is it's the ownership of gold in the spot market, but for which the London bullion market says you're merely an unsecured creditor. And once you enter into that realm, and it appears to have started in the late 80s, with these unallocated paper contracts, where what you would call paper gold, or what I call just virtual or non-existent gold. What happens once you enter into that realm is there's no limits to how much gold you can produce in the market and trade in the market. And we've got these sovereign wealth funds and oil companies and pension funds, and they're all think they're holding spot in London. They say, well, we're holding gold. You know, here's our contract. We're holding it in the London market, which everybody knows the LBMA is the big gold market.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got tens of thousands of tons of claims, and it appears that there's no gold in London outside of the ETFs and outside of the central bank holdings. Now, some people would say that, well, you could bring the gold in from Switzerland and meet that demand. But what we've seen is this rapid drawdown that occurred, happening primarily in 2013. There was an enormous pull. Over 1,000 tons got pulled out of London. And what that indicates is that that gold was going to Switzerland to be refined and broken down into kilo bars from the 400-ounce good delivery bar, and then into the 4.9s. Purity of the 99.99% purity. And the fact that this gold was being pulled out of London indicates that the gold was not available in Switzerland, because it'd be far easier to move it to a refinery in Switzerland than to truck it from downtown London through the city to the airport, transport it by aircraft, and then go through all the logistics there to get it to the refineries in Switzerland. So the fact that the London gold has been drawn down indicates to me that there's no more gold readily available in the market outside of the ETF gold and the Bank of England gold.
Really? So how long can the situation go on if there's no gold? In theory, that's the place where delivery takes place in London.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things you could do. You could surreptitiously lease it from the ETFs. And there's many that have speculated that that has already been going on. And you can see in the for instance, the prospectus from the GLD ETF that they hold gold with subcustodians, and they say they're not responsible ultimately for what the subcustodian does or has, and that they're not audited. So there's all kinds of loopholes built in there that would allow them to mobilize some of those 1,100 tons potentially from the ETFs. But if that's been going on at the same time as we've seen this other legitimate gold drawn down, then we would be very short in that category as well. So, you know, it looks to me like, you know, what we're seeing here day to day is a really entertainment in the gold market. The price followers, who are really the naive investors, both retail and as well in the fund management side of things and the sovereign wealth funds, if they're just merely following the price, they're missing the entire story here, which is that we've seen the available gold appear to disappear from the world's preeminent exchange, and that all that appears to be happening now is the cycling of the paper contracts. And, you know, the question is then, as you say, how long can this go on? And we're seeing signs of agitation and military conflict in which the United States and England are involved. And as the gold market relates to interest rates directly through what's called Gibson's paradox, I think it's understandable why these political entities like to are spurring military conflict now to change the discussion to some extent. And also, I think in terms of Russia and China are now positioning themselves for the next phase. I think they've been accumulating gold by the thousands of tons over the last several decades, in China's case, and in the more than the last decade in Russia's case. And I think they realize now, as the gold runs out and everybody starts to realize that it's just a paper swirl, both in London and New York. We haven't really touched on New York, but that the gold has disappeared from the Western financial markets, that due to Gibson's paradox, which is something Larry Summers studied very intently before he went to Treasury, we have an understanding that rapidly increasing gold prices leads to increasing interest rates. And this is what the battle has been all along, Kerry, as you've been following the financial market. Sure. So we may have enforced interest rate rises and a bond market drop coming at us now because of this scam that they've been running in London and to some extent in New York as well.
Wow, that's so What's going to happen to the dollar when that happens, David?
Well, I think all of the currencies, we're going to have to reform our currencies and move back to a non-centrally planned monetary system and interest rate setting mechanism where you don't have the criminal elements aggregating around the controls of central planning, both through the market control and through the oversight of the markets by the Federal Reserve and other central banks.
So does that happen in China and Russia as well?
I think what we may see is a Western financial crisis, and then Russia and China and the BRICS, who have been openly accumulating physical gold to some extent. I think that China's announced maybe 10% of its actual holdings, but Russia's been fairly open in terms of what it's been accumulating. But I think they are ready to keep tracking on their way, and that they will just do a lateral move to some kind of an international trade unit that is ultimately gold itself. The West here, we have a lot of gold. We could open our mints and with a repricing of gold, get gold currency circulating once again. You would still have your paper currency for the day-to-day transactions, but you would need gold currency for the major transactions. But as Bloomberg in August looked at China's gold holdings and said, well, if they have 10,000 tons, which many think they do, they say they have roughly 1,500. But if they have 10,000 and they wanted to back their daily currency transactions, they would have to see gold repriced to $64,000 an ounce, just for there to be enough. A volume of it to play that role in the daily commercial transactions.
So that's the $64,000 question, huh?
Yeah, it's quite an imposing one. Yeah. But I think the solution is adding a couple of zeros to the price of gold and opening up the mints.
So that's Jim Rickard's solution for all this as well.
We've got to open up the mints. There's hundreds of millions of ounces of gold in citizen hands. And the thing that we're fighting against here is loss of control of our currency markets and our financial markets. We've got to stabilize them. And I know it takes away a license to stimulate your markets, to create stock bubbles and to reap the benefits by the financial sector, who also are, the largest contributors to the political class. But I think that they've got to lose their franchise so that we have stability, for the vast majority of our society, as opposed to the benefits accruing to a very small elite class.
Yeah, the ability to just create that money out of thin air and then loan it out at interest, both to the government and to you for a mortgage, for credit cards, whatever.
Sure.
It always seemed to me there's something wrong with this thing.
Yeah, in the rest of the world, things have to add up and make sense. Then you get into the financial sector and you keep running into these logic hurdles when you first become familiar with it, and certainly the creation of all money starting life as debt and being debt with no real way to extinguish the debt other than with more debt money is one that it's a circle that you just can't get out of. Yeah. And it doesn't make any more sense today than it did 15 years ago when I started to dig into this stuff.
Well, it's fascinating, the concept of the debt-based currency, David. When you think about it, that every currency unit, dollar, for example, in existence was borrowed into existence.
Yeah.
And if you were to try to pay off all that debt with all the currency in circulation, you fall way, way short.
Well, there's not enough currency in circulation to pay the debt. There's many times more debt out there of different classes.
I know.
So it's a banker's heaven. You can, when this was all schemed up, but in the United States at Jekyll Island, Georgia. Mm. I mean, when you look at the interests that were present there,
yes,
they were basically, you can distill those groups down to Rockefeller and Rothschild interests, and they're bankers. And surprisingly, they came up with a scheme that benefited bankers. Wow. Shockingly.
What a shock. And what we're talking about is government of the banks, by the banks, and for the banks. And it's got to end. I think we all agree on that. But seamless transition doesn't seem too likely. There's going to be a lot of pain and suffering before the ultimate day of reckoning here. Maybe wars as well. Like you say, the war is the technique that they use to obfuscate what's really going on, and fool you into, you know, finding enemies for all of your problems and all yeah. that stuff. So
there's a battle to maintain the franchise, and there's also a battle to distract people from the source of their malaise. And I think that's a lot of both of those primary stimuli are behind a lot of the things that we see globally. I mean, there is definitely agitation going on the part we'll call it agitation, but Russia and China are repositioning themselves to access assets that we don't want them to have. And at the same time, it's pretty clear that that the West has been financing and creating ISIS and creating a monster to battle, which is just completely outrageous when you think we've got enough problems on our hands. That's the last thing we want to do right now is destabilize the entire Middle East with a Western financed and created terrorist organization. These are U.S. military senior generals from the NSA and the CIA and CIA intelligence assets have admitted that the ISIS is a creation of the West, and it's, you know, it fits in well with a distraction from the greater problems that we have. And it's interesting also, Kerry, you and I touched on this, but that there is a distraction from reality happening at the London bullion market as well, in terms of them going back and altering data in August of this year to try to cover up this massive withdrawal of gold from London. And they've actually reposted the consumption of gold or the refined production of gold in 2013 and stripped 2,000 tons out of global gold production to try to cover this up ex post. And it's just, I don't know if you want to talk about that, but it's just fascinating to me that not only do we see this drawdown in metal, but we see a very sloppy attempt at rewriting history going on.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that, because they've done this in a number of areas, these elites, when it comes to the climate data, the historical climate data, the right. NOAA, National Oceanographic and whatever it is,
National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Association.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah, they've done this.
Yeah,
all right. Go back to Obama's candidacy. You saw that they altered Supreme Court cases, not on the original website, but on the website that reposts Supreme Court decisions,
right.
and cases dealing with a natural born person, they altered these cases. I mean, it's proven here that yeah. That they'll really go to any lengths to protect and preserve, or protect to serve and protect, but their own interests.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, for the LBMA to go back and repost refinery production from the years 2008 to 2013. And strip out 2,000 tons of production, and then say at the bottom that they're going to update the numbers now, the new numbers, they will update them in the future to real numbers once they receive the actual data from 2013. And everybody knows that these refineries are giving all of their production to the LBMA on an annual basis to the ounce.
So they know.
They know.
It's a big fraud. And yeah, so, like the monetary system, right? Like our monetary system, it's one big fraud.
Yeah, you need more debt. We need to lower interest rates. Now it's negative interest rates. And I think the problem that they're running into now is that the work that's being done out there and analyzing, and I really think that it comes back to the gold market, because it's so key to setting interest rates. And when you have a debt-based money system, when you get to the extent of debt that we have now, they resort to two things. Is one is rigging the gold to keep the interest rate low, and then ultimately going to even negative interest rates yeah. to try to keep this Ponzi scheme going. And as Peter Schiff says, you can't taper a Ponzi, and the only hope they have is to add more and more to the Ponzi. And I think they're going to reach their limits here, because I do believe that these metal exchanges are going to dry up, and that some of these 12,000, 13,000 tons plus of open interest in London are going to ask for a delivery, or it's going to become known that they've been refused delivery, and it's going to cause a panic in these markets.
I think you are right, and I'm not looking forward to the day that this occurs, but It is what it is. David, thanks so much for coming on. Best place to read your work is safehaven.com, correct?
That's correct.
And of course, we will have a link in the show notes to this interview to that site, so you can check out some of David's previous writings. They're extremely well thought out. And what I find very refreshing on the internet is they're extremely well written and readable. There's so much garbage, David. Whatever happened to the skill of composing paragraphs, essays? It seems to be a lost art.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, getting us to the Miley Cyrus generation, we've lost that.
Yeah, and you know, when people aren't literate, when they lack basic skills, then these large governmental organizations can go back and rewrite history, and in an effort to pull the wool over your eyes. Fortunately, there's still a few literate folks among us, among you out there, and that's why we do this show. That's why you do your work. David, I know it's not your holiday, but your holiday's coming up. Or did it happen already?
Happened already, but I'd like to extend my wishes to you and all your listeners for a happy Thanksgiving. I think we can still say that, and we'll look forward to doing this again when you have the interest and time.
Absolutely, and we'll cover those other topics we were alluding to. David, thanks so much for being on. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Gary.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.